This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. I'm Matt, and based out appropriately across Melbourne and dialing in remotely to be with you tonight, I'm joined on the Worldwide Wave panel by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hello from Carlton.
And Stefan.
Good afternoon from Brunswick.
Now, do you know, clothes maketh the man or woman or person, and they can determine how people think about us and how we feel about ourselves. But can clothing be queer? Well, you bet it can, I think. And can this queer fashion change in different parts of the world?
And tonight we thread our stuff down the catwalk with Sang Tai, Associate Lecturer in the School of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT University. He is currently undertaking research on activist fashion in the LGBTIQ+ community.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
One of the good things about radio is that you don't have to try too hard in the fashion stakes. Isn't that good, boys? That is until tonight. To take us on a journey through queer fashion, particularly Asian fashion, we're joined by Sang Tai, Associate Lecturer in the School of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT University.
Welcome, Sang.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Hi. Hi to everyone.
Now, you're undertaking research for your master's on activist fashion in the LGBTIQ community. Yes. What does that mean?
Well, the master's is called All Tea No Shade. So it's all called All Tea No Shade, All Tea meaning T-shirts. The actual title is Challenging Hegemonic Subjectivities of Race and Sexuality Through the T-Shirt. So I'm looking at this idea of how we can use fashion to, I guess, disrupt the existing hierarchies that exist within the fashion world that is related to both sexuality and also race. So it's kind of those intersections of those two things.
So, Sang, why T-shirt?
I think T-shirts are really ubiquitous piece of clothing, particularly to Australian men. It's something that is, I think, transcends like your different levels of the marketplace, and it's something that everyone wears. So from my perspective, I think it's really important to engage with fashion that is inclusive, that everyone can participate in, because I think that's when you can make, the biggest changes and you can affect the most changes in terms of what can happen in fashion and socially in the world as well.
You said T-shirts were really big in Australian fashion. I would have thought singlets were bigger than T-shirts, aren't they?
I think singlets are important. I think singlets are probably more important, I'm going to suggest, in the LGBTIQ world, particularly amongst gay men. But I think in terms of activist fashion, I'm really interested in this idea of generating something that is potentially subversive. So I'm looking to design, make, create, and allow people to wear T-shirts that will penetrate not just necessarily the LGBTIQ community, but also, in a really subtle way, allow people that are not part of this community to wear these things as well. And I think there's this kind of interesting subterfuge that can happen if you can get these people to participate in this way, I guess. So the T-shirt project, essentially what it is I've created a range of T-shirts that looks to explore, intersectional identity that I have. So I'm identify as a gay man. I'm also Asian, and I think there's this really interesting thing about being a gay man and being Asian and existing, I guess, in what is essentially a Western world. And there are a certain kind of, I think, things that present themselves in terms of my lived experience because of that. And what I guess I'm looking to do, particularly just at the start of this first project through the exhibition I have, was to use my experiences and try somehow make them kind of explicit on these t-shirts. So, you know, have sayings or words. I mean, you know, the t-shirt has historically been used in an activist kind of environment for a long time. You know, there've been peace symbols. Lots of other people, like Catherine Hamlet, has worn them when she met Margaret Thatcher in Australia. In particular, you see t-shirts a lot in rallies and things that are related to LGBTI activism. But for me, I guess I was interested in going, well, is there a way that you can potentially, you know, share your personal experiences through these t-shirts? So for me, I was thinking, well, what are the things that potentially talk to the fact that I'm gay and I'm also Asian, but also maybe just that I'm gay and maybe just that I'm Asian? And how do I put that on a t-shirt? So I've got things like, you know, prints that say not Asian enough, or Vergasian, which for me is like fake gay Asian, which I've heard quite a lot. I've also got a t-shirt that says I speak very good English, and that's really just for me referring to an experience I had a couple of years ago where I went on holidays with a friend, and we were in Vietnam at the time, and we bumped into some Australian tourists when we were there, and while I was talking to them, one of them said to me, you speak very good English. And it's like, it's been a long time that I've kind of confronted this kind of weird, subtle forms of racism. And so I guess for me, it was about making these things explicit, but in an ironic way, you know. And I think irony is really important because it's a way that everyone can access. And t-shirts do that a lot. There are, you know, historically a lot of t-shirt labels that do that, like Stussy and a whole lot of other ones as well.
So when you put that on a t-shirt, those sorts of statements, are you trying to provoke people or challenge them or just start a conversation? What's your aim doing that?
I think it's, for me, it's a form of just sharing of my experiences, and I'm definitely interested in potentially starting a conversation. I think it's also, there's something empowering about, like, you know, reappropriating these things that are potentially you know, derogatory as well, and putting them on a t-shirt and saying, actually, we can own these things, and therefore they can be a good thing. You know, you've just seen it in a particular kind of point of view because this is how you've seen it, but there's a way that you can I guess re-own that. And I think we do that a lot within this kind of activist fashion area.
Sang, how did you first come to this idea, to this approach of using t-shirts? What was the first t-shirt you produced?
So I guess it's probably good to talk about my history. I've been a menswear designer for a long time before I started teaching at RMIT University. So I worked mainly as a menswear designer in the streetwear area. And so most recently, I was like the head designer in a mainstream streetwear brand. And so the t-shirt is, or has always been, a really important part of my design process and the way that I understand fashion. And so for me, it was a way for me to look at those kind of years of history and that experience I have in fashion and somehow turn it into something else, and also turn it into something that is, I guess, I think really powerful. The other thing, I guess, in terms of this is I've done this because, you know, I spent years designing for t-shirt labels that were geared towards, you know, mainly middle-class, white, heterosexual men. And I spent a lot of my design career designing things for all these people, which actually I realised had nothing to do with my own lived experience. And I was interested in trying to explore how I could actually access, you know, the things that are about me that weren't, I mean, you know, these kind of heteronormative and also like mainstream and, you know, normal kind of ideas of what fashion were meant to be, and find a way that, you know, there, I could access this and make it interesting, and also start to challenge some of the things that I thought were happening within the queer community, particularly online, particularly on Grindr. There's a lot of discussions about, you know, internalized homophobia. There's a lot of potentially subtle forms of racism on there. And I was like, well, you know, what is a way in which we can potentially challenge that in fashion? You know, is there a way that I could make some artifacts that you could potentially wear on these like platforms that could potentially disrupt that space? And that's ultimately what I'd like to do. I'm just at the moment going through a bit of a process of ensuring that we get the ethics approval for that, because obviously, you know, these things are happening within a space where, you know, there are marginalized people and there are certain psychological, things that we need to be careful of.
We're exploring the power of the T-shirt and queer fashion on World Wide Wave tonight with Sing Tai. It's Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the World Wide Wave.
Tonight we're talking queer fashion with Sang Tai from RMIT University. So how is queer Asian fashion different to Western or Australian fashion?
I think there's lots of different ways. I think it's very similar, to be honest with you. And I think this is a story of how, I guess, people who want to belong in certain communities present themselves. So I think the Asian community, gay community in particular, probably dress in a very similar way to the Western gay community, I would suggest. And I think a lot of that is to do with potentially things that are related to their acceptance within their communities. I think, you know, maybe some of the Asian communities are still very far behind in terms of where LGBTI rights and gay rights are around the world. Obviously, there are countries and cities that are very, you know, much further ahead, such as Taiwan, but there are also ones that are very conservative. And I think what happens is, this is just my experience, that what happens with a lot of Asian men is they're looking for a place to fit in. And so when they first start to do that, they're looking at the tropes or the, you know, ideas of the people where that acceptance already exists. And that's usually within kind of the Western communities, particularly from a gay perspective. And as they walk into those communities, they look to dress like the people in those communities. And so they present themselves in a very similar way initially. I guess my perspective on that is, by doing that as well, you walk away from your very Asianness as well. There are certain things that you give up when you do that, when you walk into a community that is, you know, structured around the, I guess, Western ideas of all of these things like masculinity and dress and all of these things. And I think as an Asian person, there are certain things that you could potentially bring back to this. And I'm interested in thinking about how you could bring back to this in a subtle way. You know, what are the Asian things that you can bring to these kind of situations? What is this kind of, I guess, what I would call subtle traits? And, you know, there are lots of Asian diasporous kind of groups out there nowadays, like Subtle Asian Traits, a whole lot of other ones as well, that talks to this kind of interesting confluence of these things, you know, of being in a Western country and being Asian, and how, you know, in some ways you're very Asian, but in some ways you're also very Western. And, you know, we do refer back to the stereotypes of, you know, being good at maths and having to get an A+ and all of those things. But those things are relevant in our lives, I think. And it's about looking at how we can, you know, mesh those. And there's these kind of like interesting things that happen. So I'm interested in bringing, I guess, the Asianness back to the T-shirt in some ways, but also in a way that is potentially consumable or understood within this kind of streetwear context as well.
You're talking Asianness there. I mean, Asia is very diverse. A very diverse place on its own. Are there different trends and different feelings within Asia?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there are different trends. I can't obviously talk to all of them because I'm not from all of these countries. But I think, you know, for me, what's a really important one is these kind of conceptions of masculinity is really important. I think, you know, you can compare what we look at in terms of, you know, what is considered masculine or mask or, you know, important within a Western context. And then, you know, in Asia, you have all these kind of boy bands and, you know, these K-pop bands that dress in a very different way. You know, they express themselves very differently from a masculinity perspective. And I think those expectations are very, very different. And I think, you know, fashion presents itself in that way. You know, they look, you know, they wear makeup. They, you know, look like potentially effeminate men, but, you know, no one questions their kind of sexuality or their masculinity within those kind of contexts.
So, saying occasionally I have been known to watch the boy band show on SBS,
okay.
And I see all of these boy bands coming up, and I don't quite know what to make of it. So, right. what What should I be reading about gay Asian fashion when I'm looking at something like that? Because there are lots of messages there, and I'm probably picking up the wrong messages from what you're saying.
Well, I don't think it's about picking up the messages, and I don't think it's necessarily about understanding the messages as well. You know, you need to understand that, you know, there are times when they're not necessarily in a position to understand at all. That requires a lot of privilege to be in that position to do that. I would also suggest, in terms of those, I guess, boy bands, it's not so much about gay fashion. Those fashion, it might present itself as gay in some ways to our sensibilities, but that's because we're imposing a very kind of Western sensibility over our understanding of what it means to be gay. And I think, you know, what you can take from, I guess, watching those things is understanding that maybe, you know, the way we think about masculinities or what we consider gay or feminine or all of those kind of other subjectivities or hierarchies that we have are actually, you know, open to being challenged. And we can, you know, think about, look at other cultures as ways to access that, to go, actually, these kind of ways that we construct, I guess, our ideas of being gay, of being masculine, of all of these things are purely constructed. No one comes out of, you know, your mum's body thinking these things. These are things that exist because of the things that we're exposed to. In the same way that you can see a trend and you want to wear something, it's because you've just been looking at it for a long time. And they're things that are, you know, have a kind of informing you subtly about what's happening. And all of a sudden, everyone wants to wear a denim jacket with, you know, a Sherpa in it. Like, that's what happens.
We're talking a lot about gay men. And across the LGBTQ communities, all that variety, all of that colour, have you got any comments about what fashion looks like amongst people who, from an Asian perspective?
I'm really careful about, obviously, talking to those things. It's not my area of specialty in terms of how I understood. It's also not part of my lived experience. But I definitely think, look, the reality is, I think, gay Asian fashion or Asian fashion within the queer world definitely presents itself, I'm going to suggest, a lot more conservatively. Yes, there are lots of people who are potentially non-binary, gender neutral, trans, and then they dress in a particular way. It's, for me, I guess, not my area of interest. It's also not particularly, I'm always careful about imposing my own kind of perspective on these things, but things are definitely shifting in these spaces. I mean, there's lots of students who I teach that definitely dress very differently. They wear skirts, they wear a whole lot of other things, even though they identify as men, or a whole lot of them also identify as, you know, non-binary.
Seeing this might come across as a bit of a question you would ask your students at RMIT, but does culture impact fashion, or is it fashion that influences culture?
I think culture definitely influences fashion. I think, I think that fashion also can influence culture as well. I think these are kind of things that run both ways. I think they're kind of inseparable. The reality is fashion exists as a kind of cultural artifact, as a form of communication, as all these kind of things. So they're completely, completely intertwined. I don't think there's any way you can speak about them being separate. They're also intertwined because fashion exists in everyday life. You wear clothes. Everyone, like even the people who don't think they're part of fashion or that it is not a part of them, the reality is you wear clothes. You make decisions on what you wear all the time. And whether you are conscious of those decisions, you are participating in the world of fashion in some way, maybe not in a way that you understand fashion to be, that you see on the catwalks or you see things that don't relate to you, but fashion definitely does relate to you. You wear clothes, therefore it relates to you. Your clothes are telling us something about you through the way you dress. It's telling us something about the culture. It's telling us something about, you know, how the world thinks about bodies and how we dress bodies as well.
I've never thought so much about fashion in my life, but I'm loving it. Our guest tonight is Seng Tai from RMIT University. You're on World Wide Wave.
This is Samuel from Kenya on World Wide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9 and streaming worldwide at joy.org.au. Tonight we're exploring queer Asian fashion with Seng Tai, the Associate Lecturer in the School of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT University. You've taken a very niche part of fashion How did you sort of focus in on that?
I think in terms of niche part of fashion, it's important, I guess, in terms of research to have to think about things in a niche way, because we obviously can understand the world in a very general way. But what we're doing as researchers is really trying to discover that kind of new knowledge, and we need to understand them in very specific ways. For me, I guess, what's really started me getting thinking about all these ideas is I read a book called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, and that was written by Rennie Edo-Lodge, who is a black woman who lives in the UK. It was actually a book that was suggested by Benjamin Law in one of the book club shows that was on ABC television. And what it did was it really introduced me to this idea of structural racism and auto intersectionality. And I thought, you know, these really things talked to, I guess, my lived experience in a really important way. And, you know, she speaks about structural racism as not just racism or kind of side racism, but she talks about this idea that, you know, how the world is structured in particular ways actually reinforces this racism. And this kind of idea of, you know, kind of any kind of structural oppression can actually be applied to any kind of intersectional identities. You know, it can be applied to women, it can be applied to a whole lot of things. And I thought, for me, I guess, this kind of intersectional identity of myself being a gay man and also Asian is a really interesting one for me to explore. And I don't know if everyone's kind of au fait with the term intersectionality and where it came from, but it was basically coined by a law professor, Kimberly Crenshaw, in 1989, where she effectively wrote a paper where she referred to the existing racial discrimination laws in the USA. And what she did was she said that these racial discrimination laws weren't effectively protecting black women. So what they had was they had laws that protected race discrimination, and then they had laws that protected gender discrimination. But what she found was that the race discrimination laws actually privileged black men. They didn't, you know, take this kind of womanness into account. And then the laws that were about sex discrimination, what they did was they privileged white women. And so those kind of, that kind of like multiple oppressions that black women felt wasn't effectively being addressed within that world. And for me, that was really interesting, because I thought, well, what are other kind of ways, kind of intersectional ways that we can understand, I guess, other forms of oppression? And then, because I'm obviously interested in fashion and that's my area especially, I was like, how does it present in fashion? You know, how does, you know, the way that fashion is constructed potentially also effective? You know, there are a whole lot of, I guess, social oppressions out there, things that are really subtle, like basic things like you can't sit with us, but into, you know, that can also be big institutionalized things like apartheid and a whole lot of other things. But I think there's definitely something about this kind of cultural construction that, you know, excludes people. And, you know, I'm sure for lots of people out there, they feel excluded out of fashion. And I thought there must be a way that we can think about how to, A, represent intersectional identities, and also make fashion a lot more inclusive, you know, make it something that people don't feel like it's this otherness, and it's about exclusivity, and it's about luxury, and there's a whole lot of things that aren't related to their lives, because the reality is it is.
So racism is clearly one of the barriers to inclusivity in fashion. How do you see that being broken down? What are the other things that need to happen to break down racism within fashion?
Within fashion itself, I think for me, part of it is thinking. I guess this is where I started talking about looking at other cultures and thinking about other ways of thinking about clothing and what is acceptable and what we consider, you know, is good fashion, is bad fashion, is not in, is not a part of us. I think that's really, really important. So I think there are ways in which we can look to other cultures. We can also be really careful, I think, in terms of imposing our own kind of perceptions of what is good and what isn't good in fashion as well. There's a very kind of colonialist perspective to go somewhere and say, actually, those people aren't in fashion. And we do that all the time. We do that because, I don't know, it's because as gay men, we're so used to being marginalized. We're really scared of being marginalized. And so we're like, oh, that's something else. That's not part of us. These are just, you know, my kind of musings. But, you know, we just need to be better at, like, for example, you talked about watching the K-pop men and them singing, and that, you know, it didn't you didn't understand it. And I think we need to be careful about actually thinking, actually, what does that mean in terms of our understanding? And how can we also be more inclusive in terms of, you know, allowing that those types of different ideas around fashion, masculinity, and all of those things that come from other cultures? And how do we not impose our own kind of perspectives on that, I guess?
Do you consider yourself an activist?
I don't know. Look, I'm interested in activist fashion. I don't know if I'm an activist. I definitely obviously have some very polarizing views in terms of how I see things. I think for me, it's really important to challenging these existing views. And I think what was really interesting was on the episode that they discuss why I'm no longer talking to white people about race, the host at the time, who is a really well-educated white woman, when she was reading this book, she felt really offended all the way through this book. And this is someone who, you know, is very liberal and, you know, considers herself very well-read. But a lot of these kind of ideas around how she could be privileged within these kind of settings was really upsetting for her, because she was like, you know, there's this sense of, well, I'm entitled to this. And I think what's important is that we need to all realize that, you know, approaching fashion, approaching anything, we come to this with a certain type of privilege, and then we've got to be really careful about, you know, not marginalizing other people, but also having the opportunity to share this privilege. And I think, you know, for me as gay men, we're so used to thinking of ourselves as marginalized, we forget to think about, you know, other oppressions that other people experience, like women, for example. Some gay men are really terrible about, you know, understanding the type of conditions that women live with and how the constructions in the world are necessarily not set up with that for them. Also, you know, there are a whole lot of, I'm not also a Muslim, nor am I a black woman. There are a whole lot of other kind of, I guess, perspective that these people have that are, I guess, a lot more, they would be communities that are probably a lot more marginalized than I am, in fact.
And is there a t-shirt for every single one of those communities?
Not yet. So for me, it's really about just focusing on the community that I'm familiar with, and then, you know, thinking about how I can do that. I'm really interested in also, at the moment, the project really is just about my experience. The idea is to really extend that out. So if there's any listeners out there who's interested in actually taking part in this, but I'm interested in doing some social research interviews and thinking about how I can extend this out to these other people's lived experience. Obviously, for me at the moment, I'm looking at recruiting gay Asian men, because that's kind of the sphere on which the research exists. But definitely I'm hoping that the ways in which this, I guess, creative practice research is conducted, and how we can look at, I guess, revealing this kind of lived experience of these people, can potentially be taken by other people where this is important for them as well. And then they can use it as potentially some methods or to adapt to their own ways of potentially producing fashion that are important for them.
And if our listeners are interested in getting involved, how do they do that?
They can email me. So you can get me on sang.tai, so sang.thai@rmit.edu.au.
And we'll pop that on our Facebook page as well. It's been a fascinating insight. Thank you so much, Sang Tai, Associate Lecturer from the School of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT University. Thanks for joining us here on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thanks.
There's lots of people working from home. They don't have the commute anymore. I reckon there's people with a bit more time on their hands. What better way to spend that time than catching up on a few podcasts? Because I know Peter, our podcast, has been doing a great job getting our podcasts out super quick. The two or three recent ones we've had, Nigeria, looking at coming out from the shadows in Nigeria, which was fascinating to see that even in a country where homosexuality is illegal, there's people pushing the barrow there, trying to break down barriers.
And hopefully we'll see that movie soon as well that was linked to it.
Indeed. And you also had one, Ian, on the archivettes, the lesbian archives in the USA.
With the wonderful Joan Nessel.
She was great.
Yeah, I think we'll try and put up the extended version as well of that conversation, because she knows how to talk. And you just give her a question and she can talk for half an hour and totally engage you. A great podcast to listen to.
Beautiful. And then we've also had Palestine, French Guiana, Australia. Look, you can go onto our website, which is joy.org.au/worldwide wave, and you can see our complete backlog of over 150 countries around the world.
And if you're going on to Apple, write us a review. Give us 5 stars, because that's how people find podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Give us a review. Tell us what you think.
A big thank you to our guest tonight, Seng Tai, the Associate Lecturer in the School of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT University. You can get involved in his study at seng.tai@rmit.edu.au.
And thank you very much for your messages. A lot of interaction on Facebook with Brenda, Mim, Danielle, Virginia, Nayab, and a lot more who've joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week. And that's W3Joy on Facebook.
And behind the scenes, our podcaster Peter and our social media master Dean.
And we'll leave you until next week.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.